I'm Tom Ewing, and this is Freaky Trigger and the Long Isles of Pop. It's Sunday, 25th of May. It's 11 o'clock, the start of Resonance FM's broadcasting day. And and here's our actual presenter, Eli Sessions, who was still on American time.
Good evening. This is Elisha Sessions, and this is Freaky Trigger and the Lollards of Pop. You hear the rustling of papers as I pull something out of somewhere. So it's a mere 7 hours after the clocks have leapt forward by an hour, or is it 8 hours? In any case, it's the beginning of the broadcast day here. What's ahead on the show? Do you have a secret life on the internet? Most of us know not to put hotmonkeylove@yahoo.com on our resumes these days, but less boneheaded forms of self-reinvention may be coming to a close if recent trends bear out. Our resident music critic, Tanya Heeden, pays the studio a visit to share her thoughts on Lionel Richie and the Commodores, and as April 1st and the beginning of baseball season peaks its promising and mischievous head around the corner, we take a look at hoaxes and pranks. Or is there a difference? All this, plus music, today before we exclusively reveal on Resonance FM 104.4 on your dial in London this week's number one single as voted for by you, the illegal downloader. But first, what has gone before? Nonsense. When all is said and done, it's still nonsense. But the study of nonsense is science! Freaky Trigger, the internet's only barely sane collective. Drop science so you can pick it up again. That means it's a website. The address is freakytrigger.co.uk. This week, Freaky Trigger has been getting ready for the London Palestine Film Festival by watching Planet of the Arabs by Jacqueline Saloum. Is that right? A montage of Arabs is seen through the lens of Hollywood, and you can find it on the site. That's the website on the internet. Alan Trewartha, who is sitting right next to me, summarized the origin of consciousness in the breakdown of the bicameral mind. There it is right there, by Julian Jaynes in 5 paragraphs. Well done. We noted Sony's innovative approach to getting people to buy the new PlayStation home video game system. Give everybody who shows up to buy one a free high-definition TV. In other marketing news of interest to the committed pub-goer, McCoy's appears to have launched, well, not much. Pick up a packet of McCoy's Ready Salted Crisps. I would say potato chips. It looks the same. Open it up. Tastes the same. But new ads shriek that these are man crisps. That's right, says the company's brand director. These crisps are unashamedly for men. In the interest of science, we're going to see if McCoy's is right about its crisps.
Well, is this McCoy's? There's McCoy's.
Yeah.
No, that's Walker's. McCoy's.
Before we get heavily into it, I just want to let everyone know that we're coming to you live today from the Long Island Expressway right outside New York. That's called an OB in the business. Let's use the savory odors of these crisps to combat the overpowering fumes of the Jeep Grand Cherokees whizzing by us on the way back from the Hamptons.
They
Your Lollards today are Alex Campbell.
Hello.
Alex Trewartha.
Hello.
And Tom Ewing.
Hello.
So, what are we eating here?
Well, I've got McCoy's flame grilled steak, which, like I say, it smells manly.
I've got a range of steak flavored crisps.
I've got a peppered ribeye steak, which I think is even manlier because it's got a rib. Actually, that's if it's Adam's rib, and that's less manly.
Dear. I've got nothing because I'm on the knobs.
Would you like one, Pete?
Well, Pete gets the Max Deep Ridge potato crisps.
Maybe Pete should have the pepperoni since there's going to be less crumbs on the knobs.
But what I want to know is it actually, does it banish unmanly thoughts in you, eating these crisps?
Shall we see?
I'd need to have an unmanly thought first, Alan.
I have a picture of Seth off the OC here.
Yeah.
Are these flavors new to you guys? Like, for instance, the Max Deep Ridge potato chips. Is that something you've seen before, or is that part of this new advertising campaign?
The Max Deep Ridge, they were invented to be What's actually... They were actually lower-fat crisps. They were crinkle cut, so they got less fat in them. But they've removed that. They've removed that as a branding thing now. They're just a Ridge crisp. So they haven't... Because the McCoy's ads are, like, a week old, we don't know. Max haven't really come back. Though Max, of course, is a man's name. So,
it's very close to the name Marx. Just add an R.
That
was also a man's name.
Well, I'm saying it's sort of ironic because this is exactly the kind of thing that would make Karl Marx roll over in his grave. The idea that the packaging is more important than what's inside.
But at the same time, Karl Marx was a sexist.
He was a snappy dresser as well, Eli, so he obviously believed that the packaging was quite important.
And also, of course, with a beard like
a big beard.
Yeah, the crumbs go into the beard. You can eat it later.
Yeah.
As beard owners yourself, or as previous beard owners, how do you find it is with the snacks?
I don't know what you're talking about.
There's always a little bit of crumbs later that you can...
Back in your box, Pete. Alex has something that she's pointing out here. What is this,
sorry,
Alex?
Not my mouthful. On the Walker's Max ones, there's...
There's
the label say, not actual size, and the picture of a giant crisp.
Serving suggestion only.
It is always actually, when you open a packet of crisps, it is always a special treat to get one that is that huge, that fills almost the whole packet. It is something the McCoys are actually quite good at. They do tend to put a monster crisp or two into the mix. What I thought as a professional marketer, when not on the radio, I think what's going on with the idea of man crisp branding is that it's a kind of backlash against healthy eating. It's basically there's a trend among consumers towards healthy eating, and this has kind of panicked the crisps and chocolate and bad things companies. And they figured, well, look, this trend is mostly being driven by women consumers.
Yeah.
And so instead, what we're going to do is exaggerate the manliness in a slightly kind of cheesy, ironic way.
Lovely irony. Mm. I find it very manly to die of a coronary.
Well, yes, indeed. Many men throughout history have done that. But, yeah, so it's a kind of slightly cynical counterbalance to the trend towards healthier food and such like. It's basically, if you're a real man, you won't bother with any of this salad nonsense.
Hey, so have we got salad crisps? Just steak.
Onion's a vegetable.
Yes, that's true.
And the steak and onion ones are pretty much similar in taste to the rest of them, which is nice.
The first song we've got coming up here tell us who... I've always wondered how to pronounce the name of this band, Alex. The song that you've brought today...
Sorry, I'm still eating the crisps. It's Gorky's Iconic Monkey.
Are you sure you still haven't got crisps in your mouth? Oh, what was that?
I've still got crisps in my mouth, yes, that's true.
You pronounce that word monkey?
It's Welsh.
Yes.
And they don't have... There are
they can't spell.
Yeah.
I think this shows you what a huge, like, sort of wire-reading nerd I was in my earlier days. I've never actually heard that pronounced. I've just read it over and over and over again.
I mean, Alan has Welsh blood in him.
So do I.
Okay, yeah.
But you've got an X in your name. There's no letter X in Welsh.
No, it caused all sorts of trouble.
One of my favourite things, you go to a Welsh station, and if you come out of the station, you'll see signs of taxis. And
taxi.
In England, the word for taxi is T-A-X-I. In Welsh, it is...
T-A-C-S-I?
Yeah, it's exactly the same word, but they
see, that makes sense.
Taxi. Taxi.
Yeah. That makes sense. Eastern Europeans would understand that completely. So the name of this song sounds to me like the name of a MoMA song.
It's called Young Girls and Happy Endings.
You know, young girls like happy endings. Well, I guess that's the way it's got to be. 'Cause without all of these happy endings, what would happen to my industry? You know I wrote that hit to sell ya. You know I never mean a word I tell ya. You know I wrote this bit to sell ya. You know I never mean a word I tell ya. Ivory towers wrapped round in silk. A young calf with his mother's milk. Victorian England shining so bright. In the moonlight. You know I wrote that bit to sell ya. You know I never mean a word I tell ya. You know I wrote this hit to sell ya. You know I never mean a word I tell ya. Oh,
Alex, I know that it's bad form to start talking about April Fool's Day in advance, but this is science, after all, and there are few things a scientist enjoys less than being unprepared for walking through a door and having a bucket of water fall on their head to the sound of hooting laughter, for instance. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the very least, she'd like a control group or something to make sure that it's funny. Are there any particular hoaxes, April Fools or not, that you'd like to talk about today?
Well, not so much April Fools, but just hoaxes generally. It seems to be a very common thing. Hoaxes are basically when someone tries to pass off something which is untrue as true and to get people to believe it. Mm-hmm. Besides different types, you can have them in literary circles. You can have...
Tell us about one of those.
Oh, well, there's the Hitler diaries, which were discovered apparently as Hitler's diaries, and included things like remember to buy tickets for the Olympics for Eva Braun.
Pick up milk.
Yes.
Only white milk.
Other things
though.
That he made notes to do.
They turned out to be Mussolini's diary.
Yes. TV hoaxes like the BBC Spaghetti Tree Harvest hoax.
Yes. Describe that one a little bit for people who don't know it.
That was an April Fool's, I think, and basically the BBC ran a story, documentary about spaghetti being harvested from trees. It was in 1957, so people weren't familiar with spaghetti.
It was on Panorama.
And the BBC dig it out every year.
People weren't familiar with... I mean...
Well, it was the 50s.
I know this is the 50s. I know that in the United States, for instance, nobody had even heard of spaghetti probably in 1957, but we're in Europe.
We're in Britain.
Yeah. Because we weren't in Europe at the time. We only joined the European Union in 1973.
Well, there was some woman who was quite famous for bringing Mediterranean stuff here about that time. I can't remember her name.
Marco Polo?
No.
So you're saying people actually fell for the idea that spaghetti...
A lot of hoaxes are done to sort of test the gullibility of people and the fact that people do trust the media to extent.
And maybe if this is the time that that a Mediterranean... woman is coming to Britain to sort of show people about Mediterranean food. This is probably also the time when everyone sort of knows, or anyone who cares sort of knows, that this envelope is right on the edge of where you might want to push that and test that to see if people...
Yeah, and I think a lot of folks are the joy of testing it to see just how far you can push something. Slightly older hoaxes would include Phineas Barnum, the showman and circus chap, P.T. Barnum, in the 19th century... something called the Fiji Mermaid, which was...
What was that?
It was the tail of a fish, the torso of a baby orangutan, sewn to the head of a monkey.
That's what you say.
That's what they all say.
Scientist.
I'm assuming it was dead.
It was afterwards, yeah.
Well, now, I've
seen... a skeleton, was it? Or is it...
No, it was a mummified kind of hideous thing.
Frankenstein.
They
claim was a mermaid.
Yeah, and people wanted to believe in mermaids, so for a while they thought it was.
Presumably they wanted to believe in kind of attractive sexy
mermaids. it's not attractive.
It would have been enough to put people off for ever.
Yeah. Another one that Barnum did was the Cardiff Giant, which was some atheist, again, 19th century, had an argument with a fundamentalist about a passage in Genesis, which said the giants once lived on Earth. So this guy then made a petrified giant out of, he carved it or something out of stone.
Blimey.
And Barnum decided that this was really good and made a copy of it and exhibited it.
And they said that this stone version was like a fossil of the guy.
Yeah, that was the idea. It was 1869, so no one really... It was easier to do that sort of thing.
I mean, the key point about that is, and as someone who likes to lie a bit, is its specificity.
Ooh.
Right? It's the fact that phone's on, people. That if you say it's a giant, then people aren't going to go for it. But it's the Cardiff Giant.
Yes, only it was in America, I believe.
Our own little giant. Oh, but in America?
Yeah. I mean, there are clearly like 18 Cardiffs in America, but
presumably also if you were a biblical fundamentalist in 1869. Pretty much you've got a license to hoax right from the beginning, given that the creation myth is that God invented the world in 4004 BC, complete with these complete hoaxes of giant reptiles and fossils.
Yeah. They all said the fossils, God made the fossils.
Later on, in 1912, you get the Piltdown Man, which had more of an effect. It wasn't just entertainment, it was people trying to hoax the scientific community into thinking they'd found some kind of evidence of early man, which later turned out to be the jawbone of an orangutan, again, a chimp's tooth, and the skull of a medieval man.
This seems like a different class, as you'd say here, of hoax.
Yeah, kind of. It's more serious. The motive is more serious. It's although apparently the Piltdown Man was a practical joke that got out of hand for 40 years.
We've all been there.
Is that the difference between jokes and hoaxes then, would you say?
Yeah, maybe. But it's tricky. The whole category jokes and hoaxes and pranks, they all overlap slightly.
Yeah.
Also, Mary Tofts in 1726, which is one of the earliest ones I found. I actually can't work out why she did this, but
I've got one that's earlier actually.
Ooh.
I'm gonna share it with you after this.
Okay.
I hate Wikipedia.
Yeah. Anyway, she tricked people into thinking she'd given birth to 16 rabbits.
Awesome.
How?
Well, I can't really say on air, but basically involved rabbits going where they shouldn't and then being extracted.
Really?
Up her yeah. Warren.
Yeah. And this, up Mary's
and,
Warren.
And presumably she found sort of objective observers to kind of like members of the medical community.
I think a doctor was in on it and he was supplying her with rabbits of the right size.
Like a magic trick.
Yeah,
with pulling a rabbit out of a hat.
Except not magic at all.
No.
Pulling a rabbit out of a wizard's hat.
Yeah.
And there didn't seem to be any reason why she would do this. It was just, why would you put a rabbit there? That's
but the best jokes are pointless.
Notoriety.
The best lies are pointless. I mean, this is what
we're still talking about.
Yeah. I mean, if you say something that's important, then people do follow it up. If it isn't very important, you know,
yeah.
then people kind of go, that's interesting, but I'm not going to set my stale by it. So.
Right, so did
the rabbit survive?
Ooh. Doesn't say. History does not record.
It's a tragedy.
I bet they died eventually.
I bet they're dead now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But they were confused.
the earlier hooks that I found is from 1708.
Oh yeah.
Isaac Bickerstaff. Does his name mean anything to you guys?
Rodney Bickerstaff.
Well, he
I've met him.
In London in 1708, he was also unknown to London. An unknown astrologer who published an almanac that predicted the demise of a very famous London astrologer, John Partridge, on May 29th of this year. You can imagine that Partridge was a little put out about this. On the 30th, Bickerstaff released a pamphlet that said Partridge had, in fact, passed away. The next day, April 1st, Partridge emerges from his house and is stared at as if he's a ghost. And legend has it that he could never shake the consensus that he was dead, and his career just totally went. And of course, Bickerstaff ended up being Jonathan Swift.
I've got an even older one than that, and it's very, very similar. And it's what Jesus did,
mm-hmm.
right? Because people can never shake the fact that he'd been crucified, but he was his twin brother, you know. And
shut
that's
up, Pete.
No.
It's Sunday.
Yeah, but it's Palm. No, that's next week, isn't it? But no, I mean, it's, you know, that's in the end, is the Bible a hoax?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Have I got time to mention any more recent hoaxes?
You sure do.
That sort of thing. I think there's a kind of general shift in the motif of hoaxes more recently. It's more things like Brass Eye and programmes like that where it's satire and it's highlighting the absurdity of certain practices and things and just the gullibility of people. And
but isn't there something fundamentally where their intention is not to pull the wool over anyone's eyes? Their intention is to speak to people who are sophisticated enough to get the joke, right?
But that involves pranking or hoaxing the people who aren't.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying.
You're still there's a kind of...
Yeah.
They're not trying to pass it off to everyone. They're trying to make a point that society is quite silly sometimes.
Well, Ali G.
Yeah, same thing. If you get the joke, you get the joke. If you don't get the joke, you're being fooled. And you know.
Noel Edmonds going on about Clarky Cat or whatever it was, that sort of thing.
Yeah, Joss Ackland's Spunky Backpack.
That's the one.
And you also get...
It's really hard not for me not to feel sorry for some of these people. No matter how racist or horrible they are, it's really difficult. Even on The Daily Show, which I love, when their correspondents interview these people, I'm just like, really sorry.
Well, yeah, there's a greater level of cruelty now, I think, and just sort of antisocialness. This chap called Boyd Rice, American, who, a bit dubious now, he seems to be a bit of a Nazi or something. I don't really know.
Allegedly.
But yes, allegedly. Allegedly. Sorry, God. He tried to present Betty Ford with a skinned sheep's head.
Who?
Betty Ford, the president.
The clinician.
Oh,
that one, sorry.
Right.
Yeah. And, that's just not very nice, really.
What was this?
Something he was rejecting the collective rules of society or something
with a skinned sheep's head.
Yes.
What you do it?
Sometimes it's not so nice anymore. But there's a thin line.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're coming through live from Radio London, BBC Radio London, right now. We've killed Sean Rowley and his guilty pleasures. And so,
next up, we're going to listen to the Commodores. easy like Sunday morning. Not so easy, it turns out, but we'll try. Now in the studio by our very own music scientist, Tanya Heaton. Tanya, what do you make of this record?
What are the Commodores talking about in this record? The idea appears to be that Sunday mornings are chilled affairs, everyone dozing, yuppies and lofflats making the odd fried breakfast. Now, I haven't seen a Sunday morning for about 2 years, and even then they weren't so much easy as painful. Stumbling out of bed, fumbling for the Nurofen and straight back to the duvet again. Nothing easy about that, I can tell you. No, there are plenty of easier things. A TV phoning question on GMTV, the Sun crossword. Indeed, for the pinnacle of easy, they should have looked in the nightclubs of the UK, not just at the simplistic tunes being banged out. If Lionel Richie had been singing Easy Like an 18-year-old girl drowning her 12th Bacardi Breezer in Blackpool Ritzies, I would have known exactly what they meant. But I, Tanya Heaton, can reveal the true story behind Easy. It's a story of inter-band rivalry. For when the Commodores say they're easy like Sunday morning, they do not mean the time between 4 a.m. and 12 p.m. Instead, they're actually putting a sly dig in at everybody's least favourite cause of art music wankery, the Velvet Underground. Whilst the Commodores had rattled out hits like Three Times a Lady and other soft soap mid-70s Motown slush fest, they felt they were not taken seriously. Unlike the VU, whose claim to fame seems to stem from knowing a German bird and a bloke who nicked Einstein's hairstyle. The Commodores thought it was unfair that the Velvet Underground got the critical plaudits, hence this attack at the kiddie piano snoozathon that is Sunday morning. The soul singers felt they could have written a song like Sunday Morning with a mouthful of gravel and a selection of Fisher-Price instruments, which is pretty much how the Velvet Underground wrote it. Well, you wouldn't let John Cale loose on a grown-up instrument. Sunday Morning is said to be a genius record, and Three Times a Lady, a song about the three painful operations a transsexual has to undergo to change sex, is laughed at, mainly because it was crap. Of course, the Velvets weren't the only band the Commodores hated. Their very name contained an implicit criticism of another 60s supergroup, Commodore being a combination of the following two words. The commode, a Victorian toilet in a wooden box, and the Doors, 60s shit in a wooden box. At least Jim Morrison is, and that's a start.
Okay, Tanya Heaton, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Tanya. You can read more of Tanya's thoughts on your favorite records by visiting her website called I Hate Music. That's not a joke. I Hate Music. Google it. It's on Freaky Trigger as well. That's a website on the internet. Now, here's Margaret Berger, I think I'm saying that right,
yeah.
Well, with Robot Song.
I told my sisters that I met someone. I told my mother that I've fallen in love. I couldn't tell my dad. It's best I don't. I couldn't tell my dad. He shouldn't know. They wouldn't understand what you really like. They wouldn't understand what this love's about. They try to set me right, hold me back, and then you can't.
Last week, Alan, you wrote a concise, readable synopsis of Julian Jaynes' The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind. I believe it went, crazy title,
yeah.
Crazy book.
Yeah.
Some people feel that, but that book makes way too many big leaps about its subject, and it put me in mind of a book I'm reading now, 1421, by Gavin Menzies, about his theory that China discovered America decades before Columbus, and he's come in for some of the same kind of criticism.
Right.
But we humans seem to be prone to this sort of thing, aren't we? Deciding on a story and then just making it work, or as your British foreign policy people would say about America, fixing the facts.
Absolutely.
The
policy. Yeah, yeah. I think it's actually sort of deep in the way we approach everything. And, it goes very deep in sort of how we see ourselves as well. I think we fake ourselves to a great deal, and this is only obvious if you look at your old diaries, or if you look at, like, some of us here frequent internet bulletin boards. Uh-huh. And have you ever looked at your old posts and thought,
yeah,
bit of a pillock? No? Anyone?
Yep.
Look at old... Just me. Yeah, that's marvellous. I am the only pillock.
I look at your post and think you're a pillock.
Thanks, yeah, no. But
I look at my old post and think, oh my God, 10 years of drinking and nonsense have ruined my brain.
Well, and that's why all the Manic Street Preachers love early on.
Yes.
Yeah.
But these internet posts, bulletin boards, etc., they are a sort of form of diary, even if they are public, and it's similar to looking back through old diary entries. I completely agree.
Absolutely. And my point is, well, I'll bring it down to some concrete examples in a second. But
bring it down.
I will. There's a lot about our brain that actually just makes stuff up as we go along. Mm-hmm. And comes into just our vision. Yeah. If you think about the visual field...
Uh-huh.
Everyone knows, you know, we've had the school lesson. There's a blind spot, and it's actually quite close to the centre of your field of vision.
A literal blind spot. There's a bit you can't see.
This is in the tradition of doing smell and taste tests on the internet, on the radio. I thought we'd do one to talk about vision.
You'd like to do one right now in the studio?
Yeah. Well, I've got a sort of test here. Normally, you use a pack of cards for this, mm-hmm. and the only pack of cards I found at home. Is Top Trump special Smash Hits Pop Stars.
Okay.
I could have brought in the 24 cards, but know Jack Bowers, so
yeah.
I've got some cards here. And what
just for the you at home, Alan is holding up a stack of hot pink playing cards with faces.
Famous pop stars.
Famous pop stars.
Right. Basically, the idea of this is to show you how unreliable your vision is. I mean, if you think about your vision, you know that there's blind bits, you know that that's not as clear, the bit to your side, you know, there's a bit where the clarity drops off. Mm-hmm. But most people think that any one time...
Like when I see Kasabian, for instance, it's just a giant black hole.
Exactly.
That's like...
If only...
You can't see behind you.
Exactly, and to the sides, it's not so great. But I think most people think that there's a stable bit of vision in front of you, like 20, 30 degrees, whatever, that at any one time you're seeing quite clearly. Yeah?
A sort of stable cone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But actually, it's much, much more than you think, and that's because our brain remembers the bits and pieces that we've, you know, quickly scan around to see.
Right.
And it presents to us, yeah, you can see everything. Yeah, no worries.
Wow,
it's actually lying to you. And I can do a demonstration with that. I'll do the demonstration first. The idea is you hold out a card at hand's length, you take a card randomly from a pack of cards. Normally it would be, you know, Hearts, Clubs, Diamonds, Spades and all that. Right. And you hold it out right to your right.
Might be Hilary Duff.
Could be anyone.
Yeah.
And then sort of slowly stare straight ahead at a fixed point.
Okay.
And then bring the card round, still at arm's length, until you can actually identify what the card is. Do you want to have a go?
Yeah.
Because obviously you were just doing it with yourself, and you would falsify the result.
Here's a card. Don't look at it. Just hold it right out to
you. At home, if you want to do this too, you can use, any card? You could probably use a pencil, if you wanted to, right?
That's not so recognisable.
You'll know it's a pencil.
Okay.
The point is to recognise.
Find a card.
Hilarious.
Find a card.
Quickly. We've only got 10 minutes on this.
You hold it right out, stare straight ahead, and slowly bring it in.
I'm going to hit Alex on the head if I keep swinging my arm around. So
when did you know who it was, though?
It's pretty much in front of me, and it's Avril Lavigne.
But when did you know?
I knew when it was, actually right in front of me, rather than slightly at an angle.
At arm's length, when the edge of the card comes to where you're looking...
Oh, I'm sorry, so this is important. So if you're doing this at home, be sure to hold your arm out really straight. Don't bend your elbow here. And hold it out to the side.
Out to the side, and then bring
it
into your field of vision, and at what point do you see it? Is this clear to everyone on the radio?
There's a card on the way.
No, it is clearly.
Yes, but you don't know which card it is, and at what point can you identify it? And it's right in front of you. It's about 1 or 2 degrees.
Okay, so now when it's about 30 degrees, I can see that there's something over there.
Yeah,
but you can't tell what it is.
Key point is, your brain is lying to you at this point, right?
Yeah, it's saying,
And also, you've looked at the card already.
Yeah, you do know that it's Britney.
But once you know what it is, because it's right in front of you. If it's to the side, you say, it's Beyonce, even though you actually can't see it.
Even if it's just a couple of degrees off, I can't see what it is.
Exactly. Most people think it's about 20, 30 degrees, you've got stable vision. You haven't. Your brain is filling in the gaps. You only have so much information. There's a tiny, tiny bit that you actually can see clearly.
And also, because the way the optics work in your eyes is that actually the world is upside down as well. But that's a different thing.
No.
Yeah.
not in a spoon.
But yeah, and also,
we literally are dancing on the ceiling.
Yeah, literally. And things like, you know, the reason why carrots good for your eyesight is because they replace the cones in your eyes. That's the bit that does the darkness vision. So because they're cone shaped.
Thing we've got
that
carrots
makes so much sense.
Yeah, you know carrots are good for bad eyesight.
No,
I think there's knobs that need looking at.
Do we have a buzzer? No.
The brain lights.
To bring this back to what we're saying is that we actually, you know, we make ourselves up a lot of time. This filling in that our eyes do, we actually do a lot more. It's easier to see in people who've got brain damage.
Yeah.
So it's a strange thing to look at, but there are lots of different neurological conditions where you've got gaps that aren't visual. For example, gaps in the memory, and there's a syndrome called Korsakoff's syndrome. What's that?
I think it's a phone downstairs or something.
I'm just filling in a sound in my ear.
Yeah, that's right.
Korsakoff syndrome, which is filling in the gaps in your memory. And I've got an example little transcript here of someone who was actually in a serious car accident. And when they were asked by their doctor, they said, knowing that they have this strange problem, mm-hmm. which is that they've got gaps in their memory, I want to check, where is it we are at the moment? And the patient says, we're in the working ward of the local health agency. Good so far.
Okay.
And why are you here? I'm here because I got injured by a hedgehog. Yeah. Let's laugh at the mentally impaired.
It could be true.
Hedgehogs are spiky.
How did that happen? I went out to search for the hedgehog in the hope that I could catch it and dispose of it somewhere that it might like to be. Somewhere quite dry, hopefully, for
this
the hedgehog.
This sounds very sane right now.
But that didn't really happen. Well, I rescued the hedgehog and delivered it to a safe environment. But in that time frame, some of the hedgehog's parasites left the hedgehog and landed on me and they bit me. Which part of you got injured? My wrists. And they just make this stuff up, which is not even plausible.
What do you mean it's not plausible? Hedgehogs don't have little thingies them sometimes?
I think the point is that didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
Oh, because he was in a car wreck.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If exactly. you were going to make something up, it probably wouldn't be that.
Yeah. Although normal, sane, rational people make stuff up all the time. Like one of the sort of classic examples of people sort of making up their own story in their heads is when sorry about that phone, when they break up with someone and both sides go away and talk to their friends and who knows, you know, drown their sorrows and try to explain to themselves and explain to their friends what happened? What the hell happened? And you end up with two very, very different stories.
Yeah, you come up with a story, even though you haven't thought about it before, you'll come up with a story.
Or if you ask someone to recollect something which happened very quickly, like a car accident,
mm-hmm.
And if you ask them various questions about what actually happened, if you give them a leading question, like, did you see the light break on the headlamps? They will say, yeah, when actually the footage they've been shown, or if it's a test, will be something where there's nothing to do with the headlamps, but because you've told them, they'll go, I remember that.
And the real experts about this stuff... the scientists, if you will, or trial lawyers, I would imagine, right? Because this is the kind of stuff that is the bane of their existence. They have these two or three witnesses.
Yeah, it ruins witness kind of recollection.
And is this due to the fact that we, the way our brain works, is that we like a narrative of our life? We, you know, the narrative aspect is what we're really after. We want to tell stories.
Alan?
Oh, definitely. I've got another transcript, actually. that is sort of a good example of that. This is another person, I think this is Korsakoff as well. Korsakoff syndrome, as featured in House, by the way. There was an episode of House with Korsakoff syndrome.
What is that syndrome?
Korsakoff.
Yeah, but what is that?
It's the filling in of missing memories.
Oh, right. So human existence, essentially, is what it means.
I guess so. Or getting drunk.
It's false memories, though, isn't it?
It's
false.
It's that they just don't. They have these gaps, and just stuff comes out to fill that gap, and they believe it. It's not a conscious decision to fake this stuff. And, you know, a lot of people have suggested that might be what it is, but their experiments pretty much show that they really believe this stuff. So I've got an example here, which sort of shows the storytelling aspect of it. The clinician asks this different patient, "What happens in the story of Little Red Riding Hood? Do you know?"
Hmm.
The answer is, "A bit, yeah. I remember the Little Red Riding Hood gets picked up by a gang of family-friendly traders who transport her to a wealthy family in a house in the forest and drop her off in the front door hallway.
Amazing.
She settles down there and waits for the domestic people to arrive, which eventually they do,
right.
And they ask her why she's there and how long she's been there. So she tells them about the terrorist intervention, and she ends up not accepting the landlord's invitation to a sad meal-taking, and therefore doesn't make...
A sad meal-taking!
And it goes on like this.
I bet it does.
And it just shows you that, you know, that there is this sort of story storytelling, we can just keep going if we actually don't know the answers.
It seems to me there's a real linguistic aspect to that as well, that people kind of start on a word, they've got half a word in their head, and they just go for the first one that comes that fits that.
Yeah. Word association.
Yeah.
Sort.
It is like word association, but it's not conscious. No. This syndrome is it's before consciousness. It's and what happens is that our conscious self observes this and says, yeah, that's right, that's what I mean.
Well, I mean, look, we've got to tell stories, right? Because otherwise we'd just be talking about chemicals and molecules, right? I mean, we have to have a story.
We all enjoy doing that, talking about chemicals, don't we?
The next song that we've got is a song that, in light of our current discussion and what we're going to be talking about next, is actually a little more of an uncanny song than I have ever sort of thought of it as being. Is You Is or Is You Ain't My Baby, and this isn't the Louis Jordan version, this is by who?
Buster Brown.
Version of that song, very different. Anyway, before the internet became widely available, a whole lot of people were already online using email, participating in moderated chat sessions with celebrities, and running up massive phone bills. This was not the internet, but privately run systems like America Online, CompuServe, Prodigy, The Grid. Oh no, wait a minute, that was a techno band. Anyway, people had usernames like 71101,8642. Early on, these systems claimed to be superior to the internet because they were private and so could guarantee financial transactions, more closely monitor improper behavior. The common phrase at the time was that the internet was the Wild West, which it wasn't, of course, although people used aliases and handles regularly, opening up the possibility that one could play act, in a sense. A new name can mean a whole different life. So in my case, that's a 22-year-old truck stop waitress named Becky Fantastic. Tom, is this phenomenon of the alter ego, is it on the way out?
It's not exactly on the way out, but it's mutated and it's taken on a more kind of controlled and mediated aspect than it was 10 years ago. I mean, basically, 10 years ago, when I kind of got online and ran up enormous phone bills and what have you, mostly talking on music nerd communities with a lot of people who've since become internet superstars.
Did you have a handle back then?
No, I actually, very boringly, I've always just been Tom or Tom Ewing. For a little while, when I was on a comics bulletin board, I called myself Talky Tawny after the Talking Tiger in Captain Marvel comics.
That's very brave of you to admit that, Tom.
I know. There we go. There's a fact that nobody knew, not even my wife.
Google it now.
Who is, I believe, listening. Sorry. But, yeah, back then, 10 years ago, there was one person out of the 20, 30, 40 regulars who I knew what they looked like, who I had any idea what they looked like, and that was Ned Raggett, who had a homepage with a picture of himself on, and he's now a very successful internet celebrity, but
it's not his real name.
Back then, kind of knowing the only way that you'd interface with these people, the only way that you'd know who they were was just by the communications you were making on the bulletin boards, and you'd fill in stuff like in Alan's what Alan was saying. Mm-hmm. Basically, your mind would kind of create whole identities and images and backstories, and and there was a character on there called a person on there who called himself Percynthia Laudro, which was the name of some hardcore art metal band songs. But if you didn't know this obscure hardcore art metal band song, you would look at Percynthia Laudro and think, Percynthia, oh, that's kind of a lady's name. Yeah. And so you get loads of people who'd have a crush on this mental kind of art punker from San Diego, who in fact had just called his name after a song by the band Cows, and was always kind of baffled whenever people started kind of basically flirting with him online. And what it seems to me is that the internet's become a lot more visual, and that Web 2.0 very much relies on you having pictures of yourself, on you having kind of
a profile.
Yeah, it ties your online profile to your offline identity a lot more than used to be the case. And I think that's sad in a way, because I think a lot of kind of fun and energy and interest has been lost.
It makes it a lot harder to lie.
It does make it a lot harder to lie, and it also it makes the lying you have to do worse. Like if you say, you know, if I was to say my name's Bob on the internet, it's like whatever. Or even my name's Lisa.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the internet, no one knows you're not Bob.
On the internet, no one knows I'm not Bob. But once you've actually got a picture that isn't you, that photograph is actually of somebody. So you're crossing the line between inventing a fictional identity and stealing somebody else's identity, mm-hmm. which is obviously a more sinister and nasty thing to be doing. It closes off that aspect of online interaction where people didn't really know who you were, and you had sort of a huge myriad of people relating to you who had their own completely individual and completely different pictures. And
what's the point of being someone else anyway on the internet?
I mean, I think that the point of being I've never managed talking tigers aside, I've never managed to like sustainably be somebody else on the internet. I've always tied my identity to my real name. And
yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting, because I think actually the majority of people in this room have been pretty. Well, and my online name has always been Pete, and Alan's
Alan,
been,
yeah.
And Alex, and the only one here actually has got a pseudonym on web pseudonym is you, Eli.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
What are you hiding?
Who are you?
I don't know. It's funny. I think I don't know why. I think that I saw really the story is that I was watching rodeo on TV one time, and there was this guy who just had the coolest name I'd ever heard in my life, and I wanted to be him. I wanted to be called him. And I've actually gotten emails from people who thought that I was this professional bull rider, because they had Googled his name and emailed me. And this woman asked if I... If my dad was this country singer, and I was like, no, I'm afraid you got the wrong person. But I did a little, I asked her questions, and it turns out that this professional bull rider's dad was in fact a country singer. He has a record and everything. And I felt like an imposter. I felt like, man, I just taken this dude's name. And if you Google his name, he doesn't come up. I come up.
Was there a point where you thought you might want to perpetuate that? I mean, going back to the hoaxes we were talking earlier, I mean, you could easily fake being the son of a country singer. You know an awful lot about country music. Yeah. Sing a bit of it yourself. You could have faked it for a bit more.
Yeah.
You know.
Until somebody asked me to write a bull, and it would be all over.
Yeah, possibly.
That would
but,
be
I mean, I think my... I think the question isn't so much what do you get out of it, because obviously the people who do it, you know, it's exploring other identities. It's kind of, you know, questioning yourself a bit, and it's it's probably quite a kind of interesting and self-insightful thing to do for the people who do it. I mean, my question is, where's the harm in it? And and if you're getting an internet moving away, like, clearly, if, you know, the kind of big joke about the internet is, oh, there's an 18-year-old girl online, and actually it's a 40-year-old trucker called Dave.
Right, that is the joke.
Yeah, but in fact, like, when you actually think about it, unless the 40-year-old trucker called Dave is, you know, doing it in order to kind of do something predatory or get access to children.
Which, let's be fair, a lot of them are.
Which, let's be fair, a lot of them are. But the principle of the thing, if it was like, you know, in principle, it is actually a fairly harmless thing. If somebody turns out to be something different from what they say, it doesn't actually kind of...
It's the implosion between fiction and real life, because it's making up a persona for yourself suddenly becomes very easy. It's not like, you know, I would have to perhaps do a bit of reconstructive surgery and maybe have to put on an accent if I'm doing it in real life. But on the web, I can do that like that, so it's very easy. But interesting, because I have a very, very... You know, I like lying a lot, as people know.
Mm-hmm. It says so on your T-shirt.
It says so on my T-shirt. But I have never really done this. I've lied on the internet about other stuff, but I've not lied... I've never been someone else.
No, I wouldn't find it very easy to do that. I just don't want to be someone else.
Now, I think some people, like me, for instance, when I took this rodeo guy's name, I found that easier than being myself. Because than having my own name, because I don't know why, I guess I felt like it meant that I could say whatever I liked. No one was going to have any preconceptions about it.
Yeah, it gives you a license to not be yourself.
I mean, one of the things
that you wouldn't naturally do.
Right. Which and that I think is that kind of like slight liberation is what's getting lost if your online profile on Facebook, which I think you actually have to have a picture and you have to know other people in order to take part in it. Mm-hmm. And MySpace, where pictures... The first thing, you know, we have a MySpace for our Poptimism club night, the next one of which is on Good Friday. And the first thing you have to answer when you set up this page is gender and age. And it's like, well, it's a club night.
Yeah.
You know? So we have a 33-year-old club night wandering around.
How does Facebook verify it is you?
I don't know, actually.
Well, the point is, though, it's because it's a social networking thing, basically...
Oh, the other people say, that really is him. He does look like Earthworm Jim.
Yeah, the only people who verify you is the people you use it with. So if you don't look like...
Oh, I see.
People, they have to be people you know.
Okay.
And then you get the wider community. So,
I don't know the internet.
So it's a very Twilight Zone, kind of like friends tell on friends kind of thing.
I mean, the interesting thing is, of course, the
we sound so old.
Old doors. Web 0.5, or, you know, Web 1, or whatever it was.
That's freakytrigger.co.uk. Okay.
Basically, the people who were on
the internet.
The people who were on that were, let's be fair, the early adopters were nerds who probably had a reason to want to be someone else sometimes.
No, that's a very good point.
Whereas now, of course, all the normals are on the web.
I know, and they don't get it, man.
Outlook Express.
Speaking of normals on the web, what about this Second Life thing? Does somebody want to take a crack at that?
I think that Second Life is one of the reasons it's so successful is that it's a kind of nostalgia for this era of the old internet, where people didn't know who you were and where you could kind of just... It wasn't so much that you would choose to become somebody else. Uh-huh. It was that you had no choice but to, you know, because your means of projecting yourself were so limited.
Now, let's just step back and tell people what Second Life is, for those of you who don't know.
Second Life, surely everyone knows what Second Life is.
It looks awful.
Yeah, no. I don't think it is particularly...
Well, it
good.
Looks like it's a three-dimensional. It's a three-dimensional graphical environment that sort of feels like a video game,
it's
right?
It's a virtual around. World, and it's taking the principles of multi-user gaming, and it's basically using them to create a much more kind of open, anything goes environment where you can design objects and avatars that the creature you play in the game can be like much more open-ended than most people actually are. Just look like people,
and you can use your sort of joystick and walk around and talk to people and like.
Yeah, though apparently the very little of that actually goes on. Most of the activity in Second Life is scheduled meetings.
Yeah, is it true that 80% of the people on there are actually just doing marketing?
Pretty much.
Okay.
That's right. There are lots of companies who have established presences inside this game, right? Like you can walk into a store and do boring shopping inside.
And
this
and
game.
There's a backlash against that. Apparently. The various branded stores and such like in Second Life get kind of virtually firebombed.
Yeah, there have been terrorists in Second Life.
Hasn't there been a nuclear bomb or something? Am I?
Yeah, there was indeed a whole nuclear bomb, which basically just wrote
spoilers,
kind of rude words all over the.
Oh right,
Alex, have you ever played Second Life?
No, although it almost appeals, because I think part of the sort of thing about the internet is you can initially pretend to be someone you're not, or just someone or just not a sort of fully fleshed out character.
Yeah.
And then if you actually meet people who you like, you can then tell them stuff. So places like Facebook, where you would need to give away a lot at first, don't appeal to me, because I would rather sort of keep a little bit back.
Yeah.
Even though you've never pretended to be, even though you've never had a sort of alias on the internet, you also wouldn't want to necessarily sort of give it all away.
I mean, there are things. There are.
Oh, totally. You know, you don't. You know.
There
you do that in normal conversation as well, though. So.
There are plenty of people on the internet that we know who are, you know, more prickly or harder on the internet when you meet them, because they're absolute softies.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's always such a difference between the people when you actually meet someone, isn't there?
There's also quite a few people that we know on the internet through the bulletin board, ilxor.com, on the internet, that we've all contributed to at one time or another, who do serially make up identities for themselves. Mm. And one of the problems, of course, with actually going the whole hog and saying, right, I'm going to make a new identity for myself and people won't know it's me, is that people always know it's you.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Most people are actually really incredibly bad at kind of going all the way and disguising yourself. And so you get certain individuals who just, their prose style is so recognisable and obvious, and the things that they get upset enough about to want to kind of rant anonymously are so idiosyncratic that you always know.
I mean, regardless of what they say their name is or whatever.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually, because for me, obviously, when I was online a lot, it was because I was at work.
Yeah.
And so at work, I actually have a work persona, which is very different to me. You know, I'm competent, likeable, quite sexy at work. Whereas online, I could just be me during my working hours.
Aww, so. That's so sweet. Well, look, just very briefly, folks, is there a limit to the internet you? What are the limits of that?
It's kind
of. Are they different than your?
Not really. No, I'm not ruder.
I don't talk about my friends unless I'm using what the persona they use online.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mention things like.
Or your family, for instance.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
You just don't talk.
And
about
if
them.
You're putting up photos, you know, you can on Flickr or something. You have a personal and you have public, you know, private and public. And
yeah, I mean, I'll talk about my son online quite a lot, but I won't talk about my wife online very much, and which is kind of a weird way of going about it, because I could actually ask her, do you mind me saying this or whatever, whereas I can't really ask him, do you mind me putting a picture of you in your bath up later? All he goes,
Now we've reached the limits of our time here, and we're going to have to go out with our new number one song, Nita Rossi, Untrue, Unfaithful. That was you. You've been listening to Tom Ewing, Alan Trewarth, and Alex Campbell. Our producer was Pete Barron today. I'm Elisha Sessions. Today's show is brought to you by the word lie. Stay tuned for the Other Woman, all-female playlist selected by Ruth Barnes, followed by Calling All Pensioners and the Rocket 88 Doo-Wop Rock and Roll Show, which begins at 3. You can find us at freakytrigger.uk, freakytrigger.co.uk. That's a website on the internet. For more of the same and different, goodbye. Shadow creeping over my love for you. I guess I'm still missing you.